In Ireland, nothing gets us talking like lions.
Tea?
Small talk.
Well, Jimmy, shocking weather we're having.
Big talk.
Even I could have played county. Office talk.
I'm MIA in the AM, but I'll circle back on the KPIs.
Real talk.
Milk before tea? Should be a criminal offence.
You could say we talk too much.
But the truth is,
we don't talk nearly enough. Lions puts the talk into tea.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now, Iran has described US proposals to end a month of war in the Middle East as unrealistic, illogical and excessive, and unleashed more missiles on Israel. This is now the backdrop of the news just coming in. This is, of course, in addition to the backdrop of the news coming in that two UNIFIL peacekeepers have been killed in southern Lebanon, with defence forces saying that there are no Irish involved and all members are safe and accounted for. But joining me to discuss the latest in the region is Borzu Daragi, Middle East journalist and analyst. Good evening to you, Borzu. It appears to some extent there is an escalation, Borzu, particularly in the rhetoric that we're hearing coming from Iran, as well as from the US.
Yeah, but I think the latest language, if you parse it, is actually cause for a little bit of optimism. They didn't dismiss it out of hand. There was an attempt at kind of reasonable negotiation. It was like, look, these demands are excessive. They're not a starting point for talks, which suggests that there is a starting point for talks. And I thought the language is actually a little bit encouraging, a tiny bit encouraging.
Well, that's good to hear, because I suppose what I'm thinking of is the US continuously talking about unleashing hell on Iran. But Iran also, you know, things like desalination plants have been discussed. So oil fields, desalination plants, this kind of critical infrastructure in the Middle East being bandied about as if they're sort of trading threats. It is of worry.
Yeah, but I think that you have to put in the context that the U.S. and Israel have repeatedly now struck at critical and even inexplicable civilian infrastructure. Today, the Israelis struck a dairy factory on the grounds that it was owned by in part by a company associated with the Revolutionary Guard, and thus it was dual use. So there is a vicious escalation taking place in terms of targeting of Iranian infrastructure, including universities, schools, residential compounds, and so on. And so Iran is responding to that. And as long as the Israelis and the Americans keep hitting these targets, forget about what they're saying, Iran is probably going to try to hit those as well. And it's going to hit them in the U.S. allies in the Gulf, because according to the Iranians, these are companies, these are organizations, these are institutions that are affiliated with American counterparts and so are legitimate targets.
Yeah. Initially, when they did start striking the U.S. allies, the Emirate states in the Gulf, it seems sort of inexplicable. But it does seem to be having some degree of effect. There is a certain fear, isn't there, among those allies about the level of destruction being inflicted on them and a certain pressure being brought to bear, of course, as a consequence on the U.S.?
Yeah, and the thing is that Iran is a massive country of 93 million, and these are tiny little countries with like very little strategic depth, with the exception of Saudi Arabia. And so they're extremely vulnerable, and they're also kind of resource poor. They depend on imports. They depend on these water salination plants. So they're extremely vulnerable. In addition, they're hosting U.S. bases. Where the U.S. is firing from at Iran, where it's refueling, where its planes are taking off from, is from these Gulf states. And that is why Iran views it as legitimate to hit them.
Mm. Borzu, I presume from what I know of the geography that if the desalination plants that provide water to those states that are mostly desert were badly damaged, that would bring those Gulf states, that would cripple them. That would bring them to their knees almost immediately with a humanitarian disaster.
Well, I suppose they could bring in tankers full of fresh water or drinking water from other parts of the world. That would be extremely expensive. But there's a vulnerability there, too. How do you get those tankers through the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, that's what I was thinking. That tankers would be all very well and good if you controlled the waterway.
Exactly. And then there's the other danger, which is the kind of rear guard action that could take place from Yemen, controlled by Iran's allies, the Houthis. Just this weekend, They launched missiles toward Israel. This was a warning shot. Nothing was damaged, just hit the desert. But this was a signal that they could get involved in as well. That would be devastating for the Gulf because they are much closer even in some respects to those Gulf states neighboring them. And they could also close the Bab al-Mandeb, which would just be another massive body blow to the world economy.
Okay. So I think from what you are saying, Iran has been strategically quite clever here in terms of its military operation and that it does certainly hold cards in these negotiations. You're saying there is hope from the language being used. What's your read on where these talks are therefore going?
Well, I don't think there's any talks yet. There's indirect communications that are going on. I'm not sure. You know, I think that the U.S. is planning some kind of surprise ground operation. You see the footage of the U.S. Marines being deployed, and the.
So you don't believe there's any talks going on, despite rhetoric from the U.S. suggesting that there is.
No, there's no talks going on, but there are indirect communications. Of course, Iran is talking to Pakistan. Of course, it's talking to Egypt and Turkey and so on. And of course, those countries are talking to the U.S. That's the negotiation that's taking place.
Okay. And from that, what's your read of what we might see come from that communication?
Well, it's really hard to tell because the U.S. administration right now is so mercurial. The whole interagency process has been dismantled, and it's really about a personality. It's a really personal kind of kind of rule in the United States. So we don't know what Trump is going to do. And if there is, if the Iranians suspect that all this talk of negotiation is just a ruse to lull them into calm before they launch this, what could be a massive attack on some part of Iranian territory. And that is the real risk here. I think the next few days are going to be crucial. Might have happened this last weekend, but there was a really bad weather in the Gulf, big storms and so on. Not good for launching a ground invasion. So you might see basically in the next 72 to 96 hours, something really big happened.
Okay, 72 to 96. And when you say something really big, you're talking boots on the ground.
Well, I mean, it's possible. It does seem like, you know, we've learned from Ukraine to follow these kinds of things, to follow when a big superpower moves a lot of assets towards a territory. And the kinds of assets that the U.S. is moving towards the Persian Gulf suggest an amphibious assault mm-hmm. of some sort on some kind of part of Iranian territory, either an island or part of the mainland, etc.
And Iran, of course, has said it would crush any such invading force, but do they have the capability to do that?
I don't know about crush, but put up intense resistance. Yeah. And there's another dynamic at play as well with this kind of nationalism being stirred up in Iran. Even people who were taking part, I mean, it's anecdotal, but it's suggestive of something kind of ominous building up. Even people who were taking part in those protests against the regime, I've seen evidence that some of them are basically rallying around the flag at this point. So there is a sort of nationalistic sentiment that basically that the Iranian soil is off limits. Anything else is okay, but no invasion.
Yeah, and that makes sense, doesn't it, from a sort of a nationalistic point of view. If someone is attacking your country, irrespective of the government, you defend your country. That psychologically makes sense. Maybe lastly, Israel obviously engaged militarily in Lebanon, obviously receiving influxes of missiles from Iran, as you point out, Yemen becoming involved. Israel's military capability to hold out against a ring of conflict zones surrounding it. Does it need more support from the US in order to do that? Or what kind of depth of capability does Israel have in these instances?
I think it does have a lot of depth of capability. What it doesn't have is a lot of patience at this point, politically, domestically. You have soldiers who are still suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder from the Gaza war, now being asked to go into Lebanon. They're not even fit to fight, according to some Israeli sources. You have a political situation where Benjamin Netanyahu had promised the Israeli people a quick victory, and now this is dragging on. The war of attrition that he basically poo-pooed and said that nothing like this will happen is happening. And this is not very good for the morale of the people, and it's not very good for Bibi Netanyahu's political prospects.
Okay, and maybe then last question for you. With that being said, what do you expect Israel to do? I mean, if you read Benjamin Netanyahu's kind of political career, he's quite the survivalist. What do you suspect could or might happen considering that backdrop?
I think that he's playing it by ear. And I just was listening to a very good Israeli expert talking about this in a chat forum. And he's basically saying that Netanyahu is kind of lost as well. And he's going through it day by day as well. Doesn't have a real strategy. Realizes that the Iranian regime is going to stay in power most likely. Realizes that particular Iranian regime is going to be even more radical, more extreme, more determined to obtain, if it was ever going to obtain, nuclear weapons than even before. And so he's stuck, and there's no kind of easy exit from this morass.
Thank you very much for joining us, Borzu. That is Borzu Daraghi, Middle East journalist and analyst.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.